This is In Focus, featuring interviews with our local newsmakers, information on community programs and politics, and the story on local current events. In Focus on Lake 88.
Good afternoon, I'm Linda Dow. It's always a pleasure to welcome author and historian Arlene Stafford Wilson. Arlene is well known for her short stories about life in Lanark County in bygone days. Today she joins us to talk about her latest book, Lanark County Comfort, Homespun Tales to Warm Your Heart. Congratulations and hi, Arlene.
Hello, Linda. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for joining us again. You know, your books are always so much fun, and we talked... I guess it was last year we talked about your eighth book. So today we're looking at the ninth book. My goodness.
Yeah.
You know, I'm thinking Tales to Warm Your Heart sounds pretty darn good on chilly days like this, doesn't it?
Well, part of the reason for that theme, too, was just what had been going on over the last year and a half. And I think a lot of people, because of the COVID, were feeling unsettled and maybe a little down. Mm-hmm. And just getting impatient. And I thought it would be good to write some stories that were a bit of a pickup with a positive twist. And that's why I came out with these ones. And hopefully they will warm your heart, because I think we could all use it at this point.
You know, in your book, it sounds like it certainly does convey those feelings of home and warmth and comfort during this time of uncertainty. So really well timed, I think.
Hopefully. And I've always been interested in local history. And I guess I was a part of that generation that waded through Lord of the Rings as a rite of passage. And the thing about that book that resonated with me was the sense of history and place. And we had our own little communities like Dewitt's Corners and Glen Tay and all the rural areas around Christie Lake, the lodges and the cottages. And I always felt like we had the same kind of close rural community that they did in Lord of the Rings, like the Shire.
Right.
Yeah, just the way we attended the same school. Mm-hmm. We worked together as a community. We saw the same people at church and at local events, and we all shopped at Kavanaugh's General Store. And it gives you a sense of place and a sense of home.
And your roots, of course, are here, right? You grew
yes,
up
they sure are.
On what? Christie Lake Road?
Was I grew it? Up on the Christie Lake yeah. Road between Glen Tay and Dewitt Corners, so mm-hmm. a very rural setting. And I think that's why I continue to write about the history of ordinary people, their trials and tribulations and triumphs, because I think that our history and our roots make us who we are, and our stories can live forever, but we have to tell them, and we have to record them.
And thank goodness for people like you who are doing this, Arlene. You know, you've once again captured intriguing anecdotes of people and places that no doubt evoke feelings of nostalgia in readers. And I'm just wondering, what gems will we discover this time in Lanark County Comfort?
Well, this time I've written six short stories, Oaks' Bakery, one on the Pant Barn Dances, one on Flower Station, one on Perth's Millionaire Bachelor, and a little bit about the 125th anniversary of Calvin United Church, and my final story is about Arleydale Lodge at Christie Lake.
Right. Would you like to give us a little sneak preview of some of those stories today?
I sure can.
That'd be great.
Oaks' Bakery. I'll never forget the great debate at the Perth High School cafeteria was always, which was the best, Oaks' Honey Dip Donut or Oaks' Long John?
And, Long John? What are those, Long
we
John?
We had heated debates in the high school cafeteria for years over that, and of course they were both good.
And what's a Long John other than underwear?
Well, Oaks' Long John, well, I wish we could still get one now. I'd run out and get you one. But it was a long donut. It was split in half. Uh-huh. And there was cream down the middle.
Oh, boy.
And then they used to sprinkle some powdered sugar on top, and that was...
Sounds like a cream puff or a chocolate eclair or something.
It was to die for. And their honey-dip donut, I've never since found a donut as good as theirs.
Is that right?
Their baked goods were wonderful. And, of course, what I did with the story was I took it back to the original Oaks, William, who came from Ireland, and settled in Oak Leaf in Leeds County. And then I talked a little bit about some of their history. Their son Thomas, who was a stone cutter, and he came to Perth in 1893. And then their son William opened the bakery that we knew in 1926.
My goodness.
Yeah. And his brother Delbert, who they called Deb Oaks, he delivered the goods with a horse and wagon.
Oh, geez.
And so that was a, I don't know, it's interesting to look back on things like that. They had, they almost had a disastrous fire in 1946, and it was one of the Perth constables, Jack Illingworth, who was doing his rounds. And all the other officers used to tease him because he took his job too seriously. He used to check the windows front and back, and he used to check all of the stores in Perth.
Oh, really?
So while he was out checking the back door,
yes.
He noticed the fire. He noticed the smoke coming out of the back of Oaks's.
Oh, my goodness.
So he saved the day. He broke in, grabbed a bucket, and put the fire out. And the other constables teased him because they said the only reason he did it was to make sure that he had his steady supply of his old-fashioned twisted donuts that he liked. So I wrote a little bit about that. And
right.
I talked to some of the staff that worked there in the 1970s, and they had these famous fish fries, and Harold Oaks and Donnie Oaks fried fish for all the staff every Saturday morning.
Really?
And the staff, I mean, they never forgot that, how special that was to them.
And that was where Oaks's Bakery, I remember that, when
yeah.
I moved to this area back in the, you know, late 70s, early 80s, I think, on Wilson
yeah.
Street. Yeah, it went for years and years, but I didn't know about that past history, so that's interesting.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And then the same year, their 55th anniversary, 1981, it was sold, and because of a lot of reasons, fast expansion was what a lot of people said. It ended up closing in 1982 under the new owners.
Right.
So, yeah, 30 people lost their jobs, so that was kind of a sad ending.
My goodness.
But the stories live on, the stories from all the staff members that I talked to. So there's lots of anecdotes in that one from people that worked there.
Yeah, yeah.
The next story that I wrote was about the Pampburn dances, and some of the people from the 70s and 80s might remember those. It was, the Pampburn was a blue jean store.
Yes, and, I remember it.
Yeah, and Perry Weigel, he was a young lad from Smith Falls, and he was a real go-getter, a real businessman, considering the fact that he was only 21 years old
oh,
when he
goodness.
Opened that store.
Yeah.
And the same year, he began to organize rock concerts. And they were first at the Farrell Hall and then later at the community center. And he brought in huge acts like April Wine and Octavian and Stampeders and Lighthouse and Metagenesis and Ken
My
Mitchell.
Goodness.
Yeah.
It's amazing that we just don't have those bands coming to Perth anymore, do we?
No. He was a really
yeah.
good promoter, really good at doing that. And he told me some interesting anecdotes about his time spent with the band and different things. One of the interesting things he mentioned were the riders on the contracts, and I didn't know anything about that.
Mm-hmm.
But he said the bands often requested specific things as additions onto their contracts.
Such as?
So they might request champagne or maybe beer before the show or liquor after the show
right.
or even a sit-down dinner in a restaurant. So that
yeah.
was those were additional expenses I wasn't aware that that had to be paid when
right.
when you brought a band into town.
Right.
Yeah. And he had some comical stories, too, about the bands. Things that happened before and after the shows, because some of the bands, you know, partook in certain substances that weren't legal at the time.
Right.
And so there was a little bit of that. And he talked a little bit about the young people who were regularly always trying to sneak alcohol into the concerts, those bad kids. And so he had lots of stories. So there's lots of stories about Lighthouse and April Wine and Kim Mitchell in that one.
Okay, well, we've got to get that book and find out what the rest of that story is all about then. Don't give too much away now, Arlene.
Sorry?
Don't give too much away.
No, I won't. I also wrote a story about Flower Station, and that kind of started because my dad loved to take us on Sunday drives, and we had a 1956 Buick Century hardtop car, if you can imagine.
Oh,
they were a pretty little car. And he used to take us mostly to Balderson and Ferguson Falls, but once in a while we'd drift off farther into Calabogie
yeah.
and Flower Station. And one of the things that I noted about Flower Station was how many of the people lived a long, long life. and a long productive life.
Mm.
And I started wondering if there's something in the water there. Because there were four people in particular that stood out to me over the years. Granny Majuri, Irene Crosby, Joe Lalonde, Winnie Close. Granny Majuri, for instance, she lived to be 104.
Mm-hmm.
And she said her secret to long life was walking everywhere and smoking a pipe. And when she was 102, she actually asked people, because they said, what would you like for your birthday? And
yeah.
she said, I want to go up in a plane. So she went up in a plane. They drove her out to Carp, and she went up in a plane for the first time.
No
and
kidding.
Then there was Irene Crosby. They owned Crosby's General Store. And I don't know if you've ever heard of that. That was a popular place.
Yes, uh-huh.
Well, she gave birth to 18 children, and she lived to be 95.
Wow.
So there's a little bit about her. There's a bit about Joe Lalonde. They called him the husky young woodcutter from Flower Station. And he was so determined to sign up for World War II. He was such a patriot that in 1942, Joe left in the middle of a snowstorm, and he walked to the recruiting office to join the Army. And then he ended up in World War II serving as a gunner in France and England and Holland.
Incredible.
And he lived a good long life, too. And then the last story in Flower Station was about Winnie Close. And she wrote a newspaper column for 50 years.
I remember that.
Yeah, she wrote one for the Perth Courier and one for the Lanark Era.
Right. Who visited who?
Yeah, that's
right.
Who visited who and who got married and who was having an anniversary.
Right.
Well, she was another one that lived a long, long life. She lived to be 91. And
you know, I think you're right. There must be something in the water up there at Flower Station.
There must be. You know,
maybe it's got something to do with the name. It's kind of a nice name, Flower.
It is. It is. Oh. And they, it was actually named after the governor of New York at the time.
Oh.
His last name was Flower when they were building the K&P Railroad through that area because of the mining.
Yes.
And that was named after him. But yeah, I do think that the people in that area seem to have a lot of longevity and good health and. Yeah, I don't know what they're doing up there, but it's working.
Right.
The next story was, or is about, Perth's millionaire bachelor, and that was John McLaren. He was a whiskey baron, and he was the creator of the Mickey-sized bottle.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, and he owned McLaren's distillery, and he claimed that his whiskey had a unique taste because he used water from the Tay River. So I don't know if that was true, but I think we've all drank a little water from the Tay River. It can't be too bad for you.
Right.
He died in 1901 without heirs. He never married. He never had any children. And at the time, he was worth $3 million.
Well, that's a lot in those days, I imagine.
It was. So everybody wanted a piece of his money. So there ended up being a court case in Perth, and they said it was one of the most scandalous court
Is
cases
that right?
ever. The trial lasted 5 days, and spectators filled the aisles, all the available seats, and some of the ladies even packed lunches and ate them on their laps because they didn't want to lose their chairs in the courthouse. But
they had too much fun back then.
Yeah.
Life's not as much fun now, I don't think.
Well, I think part of the reason they were drawn to this trial was it was four families that ended up airing their dirty laundry. And they were fighting in court. It was the Cameron family, the McLarens, the Stewarts, and the McIntyres. So they were, you know, very well-known, kind of distinguished families in the community. And in court, they were making accusations. They were testifying against each other.
Oh, my heavens.
Yeah, I won't spoil the story.
Well, that's entertainment for you.
Well, it sure is. So it's interesting to see what they said about each other and the outcome of the trial.
Yes. Yes.
The next story I wrote was about Calvin United Church and the 125th anniversary.
Where is that, Calvin United Church?
Calvin Church is on Cameron Side Road. So if you were at Dewitt's Corner, you would turn up towards Cameron, towards Highway 7.
Going
that
west
in that
out
direction.
Of Perth, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think church in a rural farm community was not just about religion. It was a meeting place for neighbors.
Mm-hmm.
To catch up on local news for the farmers at a time when people were a lot less mobile.
And they needed that, right?
They
that
did.
Connection,
and the ladies,
place of connecting.
Yeah, the ladies' auxiliary provided fellowship because rural women at that time were more isolated.
Yes.
And many of them didn't drive. So so the fundraising events, like the quilting bees and the bake sales, it was a time to come together and share their thoughts about raising children and tips on making a penny stretch as far as a dollar and and their hopes and dreams for the future. So that was a big part of church, was it was a community place for us too.
Right.
So, you know, I talked a little bit about the quilting, the cookbooks they produced for fundraisers, and the events that were held in the hall, strawberry socials, and those were famous, Calvin Church's strawberry socials, with their homemade biscuits and fresh whipped cream. And, I mean, it was whipped cream. There were a lot of dairy farmers as members of the church, so
it'd be real
whipped cream, not the stuff you buy in the jar.
Right.
You know, so it was quite something. And I took it all through going back to the 1800s, the history of the church.
Amazing. You know, there's a lot of research that goes on that you must do for these stories, Arlene.
Oh, tons of research, tons.
Right.
But I think that if we forget that history is a perishable commodity and it disappears as memories fade and people pass on, it's important to preserve some of these people and places. So while they're still here, it's good to talk to them, to interview them, to take down their stories and record them.
Now, as a genealogist, why do you think it's important that we love to remember the good old days?
Well, I think that we all have, you know, we all have our histories, and that's what makes us who we are, is our history. Our parents, our grandparents, great-grandparents, where they came from, and their customs and traditions, and some of these things have been passed down for centuries. Even, you know, I think of Christmas traditions, some of the things that we do, and probably people don't even know why they do them. But it was, you know, traditions that were brought from the old countries, like using Christmas crackers or putting up a Christmas tree or, you know, having eggnog. They all came from our ancestors.
Right. And it is important for us, you think, to connect with our past then?
Definitely. I think it makes us feel more grounded.
Right.
And, you know, if you spend a little time looking in the past, it helps you reflect a little bit so that you can look into the future, you know, with clearer eyes.
And comforting, isn't it?
It is. And you have a sense of your history, too.
Especially in this day and age when everything moves so quickly. How important is it for you to tell these stories?
Well, I think that one of my drivers is that I can never find stories about things or places that I want to read about. And so that's one of the things that pushes me forward, is I'll go into a bookstore and I'll try and find a story about a place where I grew up that I know. And it's not always easy to find local stories. So I think that's a big driver.
You've got one more story in that book.
I do. I have Arledale Lodge at Christie Lake.
Arledale Lodge.
That was built by the famous Marx Brothers, the vaudeville entertainers. They were very popular in the late 1800s and early 1900s, and one of them built this lodge in 1922, and it kind of became a playground for the rich and famous of that era, and they hosted actors, musicians, and the who's who of Perth.
Incredible.
Yeah, and it passed down through the years. In 1938, it passed to Clayton Hands and Richard Newson. And then in 1957, it was bought by Neil and Verla Stewart. And 1969, Bill and Anna Groom purchased it. And then the story goes on, and there's a little bit of speculation at the end of the story about a fire that happened. So I won't give that away.
Okay, and you know, we've only got a few minutes left, so I'm just love to chat with you more about this, but there's always a time limit on these fun things.
Yeah.
So I just wondered, you know, the book's been successful, right, since the launch in September?
Oh, very much so, yeah. It was launched at the Book Nook at 60 Gore Street, Perth, on September 11th, and there's signed copies available there. And also at Spark Books and Curios at 76 Foster Street. And that's
in Perth as well.
That's where the bookworm was.
Yes.
And at Mill Street Books, 52 Mill Street in Almont, there are some signed copies there as well.
Okay.
Or you can get them online at staffordwilson.com.
That's great. So we can. Do you welcome feedback from people if they want to send you a note or something?
Oh, definitely, definitely.
To where?
You can, there's contact information on the website at staffordwilson.com if you have a comment or a question or anything at all, an idea for a story. Sometimes I get ideas from readers.
Okay.
So that's always nice. A place that they think that hasn't been written about yet.
Sounds good to give you some information about.
That's
something
right.
else you can
yeah.
write about, as
that's
if
right.
you don't have enough to do.
I know.
Well, we've been enjoying your books over the years, Arlene, and
thank you.
Is just one more, Lanark County Comfort, Homespun Tales to Warm Your Heart. It does. They do bring a sense of warmth and comfort and a lot of laughs as well. So we're really thankful for this effort that you put out this year for us to enjoy.
Well, I'm glad.
Yeah.
I'm glad. And I hope people do enjoy the stories.
Well, and I want to thank you so much for joining us today, Arlene.
Oh, thanks for having
it's
me.
It's been great. And have a lovely Christmas holiday.
You too. Merry Christmas.
Yes, same to you. So thanks so much for today, Arlene.
All right.
You take care.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. My guest has been author and historian Arlene Stafford Wilson discussing her latest book, Lanark County Comfort. I'm Linda Dow. Thanks for listening. Have a great afternoon.
In Focus on Lake 88.